Welcome to Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumsomi, a passionate and relentless pursuit of exploring how individuals use good judgment in everyday life, both in their personal and professional lives. Chipiwa Ramutanga is a chief executive officer of TGR Global Enterprises, whose expertise is to transform the IT function into a powerful catalyst for innovation, operational excellence, and sustainable competitive advantage. Chipiwa is a multi-award-winning business technology executive who's a specialist in business turnaround strategies, information technology, as well as digital transformation. She has an MBA from the Gordon Institute of Business Science and a Master of IT from the University of Pretoria. Ilu, thank you for making the time.
Thank you for inviting me.
So we met when we were, we'll call ourselves young adults.
Hmm. Did we still qualify?
Yes. Yes, we were young adults.
We could even train the youth league.
Yes. Yeah, slightly. So where were you born? Do you have siblings?
I do. Mm. My mother's choir. I was born in Limpopo. Yeah. And the choir can sing, eh?
Uh-huh. Oh, you can?
We can sing.
Oh, okay.
All of us.
Mm-hmm. And how many?
There's five siblings.
Yeah.
So that means the six of us, my mom calls it a half dozen.
Yeah, you are all so funny. And where are you in the pack?
I'm number four of six.
Oh.
Yes, ma'am.
So there's still another one.
Yes, there's two more people after me.
Yeah. You six?
Yes, and I share my birthday with my younger sister. 4 years apart.
Oh, my golly gumptious. That was well planned.
Yes.
What is the one personal value we'll never compromise on and why?
I think I don't have a personal value I could compromise on because the mere fact that I made it my
Your value.
It's personal. It's not about how the world measures me. It's about how I measure me. So I want to show up in excellence. I measure on, did I give it my all? I need to show up with integrity. I need to do it for me. It's not something that I could give away and be able to sleep at night.
Yeah. So who had the greatest impact in influencing your worldview and how did they do that?
Definitely my parents.
Yeah.
They pointed me to God. And that on its own helped me find my purpose. They also set a tone of my work ethic. I show up. I give my all in whatever I do. And also they help me build my character of being a systemic person. I build structures. In a messy situation, I will solve a problem and come up with structures that can work for everyone. And also they showed me a world that's bigger than me, that the world does not revolve around me. There are other people out there that I could show up for, that I could add more into their lives, and it gives meaning to who I am.
Mm. The love affair with your parents?
I think they're amazing. They were ahead of their time.
Yeah.
If I consider that my dad is a royal boy, you know? So when you are a royal man, to be close to your kids, and you choose to put your voice on the table in terms of your dreams and ambitions for them, I would say he practices autocratic democracy. So that on its own tells me he is amazing for that era.
Yeah.
I also adore the fact that my mom knows how to keep rank and run the shop like a COO.
Mm-hmm.
So it has set a tone even on how I look at leadership.
So you mentioned he was a royal boy. Give people the context of...
We come from a royal background.
Yeah.
My uncle is the chief of Mashamba. So we are from the Mashamba clan.
Explain to the global audience.
So in the context of local villages, we are royals of the Mashamba village. Interestingly enough, my great-grandfather ran away from chieftaincy and he changed the surname.
Oh.
So my real surname would have been Mashamba. So Ramutanga was this chief who would make people work in the fields at 2 a.m. in the morning. So that's why I'm saying my parents shaped the work ethic. So 2 a.m. work in the morning doesn't scare me.
Why 2 a.m.?
Yeah. Sometimes working requires you to be up early, especially in a hot area. If you're going to be planting anything, starts a bit earlier, but later on it's very hot.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's logic to everything, but I just had to figure it out. I know. I know, even with your gym, early in the morning, yes. Dedication.
That one was me switching on the system because
yeah.
I realized I was not really a morning person. So I had to develop a routine that allows me to switch on. Funny enough, when I was at Telkom and I ran operations, I used to wake up multiple times at night. So I could be woken up 10 times through the night. So I had to learn to answer the call and get back to sleep and answer another call because I had multiple customers. And this was more about running the operational systems for those customers. Interestingly enough, in the beginning, the first month of this job, I would even put grapefruit juice next to my bed so that I can drink it because it's so bitter. That I don't mumble over my words while I'm talking to a customer in such early hours of the morning.
Yeah.
And as time went by, I developed a rhythm to a point where now my team could call me at any time at night. I'm able to ask them the relevant questions, give them the guidance they need, and I get back to sleep with such ease.
Oh, wow.
So the 2 a.m. from the farm, it
transferred
to the office.
Yeah. And it works.
You are so funny, though.
What gives your life meaning and purpose?
So I was born with a name. My grandfather had a dream before my mom was even pregnant with me that they had a baby called Chipiwa.
Hmm.
And then when my mom was pregnant, my dad had a dream that they had a baby called Chipiwa. So when I was born, nobody asked each other what will be my name. I was given a name in advance. So I'm always referring to the scripture in Jeremiah 1 verse 5, that before you were formed in your mother's womb, I knew you. So God named me Chipiwa.
And it means?
And it means a gift.
Yeah.
So I do believe.
Or in what language for people don't know?
In Venda. And it means I'm a gift to the nations.
Hmm.
And it's something that my mother taught me as well. Because she would normally explain that you are a gift to many, not necessarily her gift only.
Oh, wow. That is an expansive way of thinking.
Yeah. Hence, I look to them and I'm thinking, I've been blessed.
Yeah. And then I look at my name, Dudu, Comforter. They just wanted to be comforted. They were just like, comfort us.
But normally you become what you think.
Yeah.
So in all fairness, if you repeat your name to yourself a few times,
yes,
you will believe.
What? Oh, no. I totally believe I'm a comforter. Even when I give you discomfort, I'm comforting you still. How do you respond to failure or setbacks in life?
I think I am a prisoner of hope in totality. I do know life comes with its own challenges. And I always apply this model where I ask myself, what is it that I'm struggling with at this moment? So that I pin down the real issue. And in the midst of it all, I take it to what is it that I can control about this issue? And what is it that I can influence? What is it that I must just let go? Because there is nothing I can do about it. And in the darkest of moments where I feel like my breath was taken away, I've always sought to go back to God and bow down my knees. And there are times when I felt like the answers are not coming until I read a scripture where David, at a certain time when they were at Ziklag, they found their wives and their camp burnt out. Their wives were taken away. The children were taken away. And him and his mighty men, they cried until they had no strength to cry. And I always say, as royal as I am, I will privately cry to God because even David, a warrior, could cry until he had no strength in him to cry.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, it's the same place where his own mighty men now, they were talking of stoning him. because probably they blamed him. He's their leader, and their wives are taken, their children are taken. And he had to strengthen himself in the Lord. And when he went to pursue after he got a word, he still took those people with him.
Mm.
And for me, that's profound. So it has shaped how I see adversity as well. I'm able to walk over the fact that this person looked like an enemy, because I perceive that he could recover his heart about his men.
Yeah.
Because he could easily have just said, this guy's nearly betrayed me. I'm not going again with them.
Yeah.
And funny enough, when they were retaining, because they retained with spoils, there were some that were left by the river. They had no more strength to cross over. Then the ones that were retaining with him with the spoil said, don't give the ones that remained. And he said, no. Even the ones that were remaining here, they get this equal portion. That, for me, shaped probably who I am as a person in my leadership.
Yeah. Hmm. Lots of wisdom. I suppose there's a book in the making. what do you believe is your greatest strength, and how has it shaped your choices so far?
I am a problem solver,
uh-huh.
and I build structures. And it has made me choose even jobs that are complex. I remember in some interviews, I'll even say, how big are your challenges? And if you can explain them and articulate how big your challenges are, then you've got me.
Yeah.
It's interesting that I'm attracted to those complex environments where sometimes they have got crazy deadlines about something that's happening at a set time. And I need to help them get there.
Yeah.
And when I look back and I realize that whatever I've built has added meaning, or it's got an impact, it changes my heart.
Mm.
I've got an opportunity in my life that I am able to look back at some of the things that I've done that have changed the way people live, the way people work, or even the way this country functions, because I've even worked for the government.
Yeah. Which brings me perfectly to this point. What inspired you to pursue studies in information technology?
Interestingly enough, it was a Jetta that looks like a foxy.
A Jetta that looks like a foxy. Okay. yeah, continue.
A friend of my brother's, Peter, he had a Jetta. And one day I asked my brother, who was still studying and is now doing his honors, he ended up doing his master's. So I was like, this guy, he's already driving a car. You're not. He's your friend. What did he study? He said computer science. I had no clue what that thing is. So the first time I even saw a computer was when I was in T-shirt. But day, did I show up for that IT? I did.
Yes. Because of that car.
Because of the Jetta.
We do appreciate that Jetta now.
Definitely. And
it was the inspiration.
You know, funny enough, when I won the Visionary CIO Award, my friend threw a party for me. And I invited the friend who owned the Jetta.
Yeah.
And people were much more fascinated to meet the guy behind this Visionary CIO Award now. And he genuinely did not know how much influence he had in my journey. And it's challenged me as a person, because it means you never know who's watching you.
Yes.
You have no idea.
And what they're drawing from you.
What people are drawing from you. So you better, you know, live right as much as you can.
Well, the chatter of it, honestly. So in 2019, you were amongst the first South African CIOs to receive the Professional CIO designation from the Institute of Information Technology Professionals, South Africa. This is the highest grade awarded to South African ICT professionals. Why was getting this designation important to you?
Personally, when I was a student, I always wanted to be a member of the Computer Society of South Africa. It just felt like prestige and honor.
Yeah.
So this was really a nice way to enter that space as a professional CIO. But from a profession point of view, I thought the IT industry needs a bit of professionalism, because anyone can wake up tomorrow and say, I'm a CIO, and you need some...
Already?
Yes. It depends.
Yeah.
If they walk through your door and you are willing to hear their story, and people can really bring in terminology to sound like they are knowledgeable about the area, And yet if you listen through and you are an expert in the area, you will understand that this is not making sense. So on its own, it's not like accountants or doctors where you've got, you know, bodies that certify you as a CA and you register with the health association. So we do need that professionalism. We are on a journey. We're not yet there. And the prevalence of AI really does put more people at risk. So we do need standards.
Yeah. Hmm. So you launched your company, TGR Global Enterprises, in October 2024. What does the organization do, and what about your character made it possible to leave a stable executive position in a global firm to be an entrepreneur?
So I don't think I ever thought I was being an entrepreneur. I still don't think like that. So that's the nice thing. So TGR Global Enterprises is really an answer to business in terms of how do you harness your technology investment. It speaks to the C-suite, the board, Exco, in terms of helping them carve out strategies, their governance journey. It also has a course for boards and Exco IT for non-IT leaders. It's really to assist boards and Excos on how they can own their governance responsibilities, balancing act with the investment that they need to make, taking advantage of the opportunities in IT, and also managing the risks that come with technology.
Mm.
So it's equipping them and working with them on their journey. It also has something for the CIO. I am an advocate for CIOs because I've been there 20 years. So the CIO, even though you're an established, solid CIO, whenever there are changes in your market space or in the organization, you do need a sounding board, someone who has lived these experiences and can help you navigate some of the landmines you may invoke, because by just the nature of the role, it invokes landmines. And we also have something for aspiring CIOs so that we can help them, train them to become CIOs.
Yeah.
We definitely look after our future leaders in terms of an academy that works with IT graduates.
Mm.
So how I got into this is really, again, an issue of me yielding to my calling, to be honest, because I've had a lot of mentees along the way. And this time around, I realized they needed more. I had more CIOs who needed more from me. And I realized this one gentleman helped me build the first product. And I thought, this is interesting. And on the other hand, I realized I've had experience in these areas. When will I get to go and give the nation and the world this gift that they have?
Yeah.
And this is such an opportune time. And for me, it was never a choice about stability or comfort.
Yeah.
Because I've been here before. When I left Telkom as a senior manager availability to be a CIO for the first time. This is more than 20 years ago. I left an amazing environment. I had amazing bosses. One of my executives, Bob, I even nominated him for Boss of the Year. We ended up in the top 25 and we appeared in a magazine. And this made more sense to me because my previous job, I've had a racist boss who could not even greet. Even if you greet him, he would just look at you.
Oh, wow.
Seriously, I even said, does he think my skin can rub off of him on him if he greets?
That's scary. Mm.
And in a way, walking into Telkom and being received in this team, I was there for 6 years. I grew literally from the programmer that I was when I walked through their doors to the senior manager availability that left Telkom. And even then, I left comfort because I realized I've outgrown where I am. But then I didn't realize that it was my calling me to say, By the way, there is a world out there that awaits your ability to build systems and structures.
Yeah.
And in a way, I drew from that same strength that I've learned to trust a known God with an unknown future because he's been faithful throughout.
Yeah.
So it's just me walking every day into my purpose, into where I need to be.
Okay. The very best.
Thank you.
But what belief or habit are you having to unlearn as you transition from being a corporate leader to an entrepreneur?
I don't think it's unlearning. In fact, it's more learning of some of the little skills that I've gathered. So upon reflection, I realized that of the 5 CIO roles that I've occupied in the past 20 years, 3 were group CIO roles, even though they were not necessarily named group CIO. Only one of them, I had the title of the group CIO. And in a way, when you're a group CIO, you need to work with the head of entity. You need to work with the CIO. And you don't work there every day. So you need power of influence. Mm. You also need the power to learn and listen. The humility to listen to how they interpret the world. And your solutions can be on problems that don't exist. You need to hear what they're saying. And sometimes they have non-negotiables. And they are not necessarily communicated. And you need to read between the lines.
Wow.
So these skills, I didn't realize that I have even gathered the skills along the way. Now that I need them, I realize I can draw from them.
Yeah.
And in my last group CIO role, which now I had the title of the group CIO, it was even more interesting because I worked with multiple industries. So I'll sit with the CEO who's in another industry from the other one that I'm sitting with. So I had to learn about their industry so that when I approach them and propose solutions to some of their issues, they are guided by an informed mind.
Mm. So we're already in consulting already, I just
didn't in-house. Know.
Yes. So how does your vendor heritage influence your leadership style and approach to decision-making in business?
I've never viewed myself as a vendor heritage person.
No.
I think my identity lies in the fact that I'm royal and I'm very clear about that. There's no confusion. We don't have the crowns or the money, but I'm very much a princess of the Mashamba house. And that's it. But more so, I really am an African. I own it. I prefer African food from anything else. And I didn't realize that...
Especially from Limpopo?
No, I didn't realize that it's not necessarily from Limpopo.
Oh.
It's even across Africa.
Okay.
Because whenever I'm in Mozambique and I ask them for my traditional food, they can give me the traditional food.
No.
When I was in Zambia, the same.
So it's more African.
It's African.
Okay.
And it was interesting that now when I was in Kenya, they could produce the food that made sense to me.
Oh.
Then I realized...
Is it a Limpopo connection? Because...
It could be that,
yes.
That these people all, you know, came from Central Africa to Limpopo.
Yeah.
How will I know? We're almost there.
Yeah, because I don't always find the food that I'm used to when I travel. How do you see technology being used to address challenges faced by underrepresented communities in rural South Africa?
I do believe that we could really solve some of the issues we have in underrepresented communities, especially in farming. There is precision farming that can really allow you to increase crop yield. You can use technology to manage the health of the soil because those communities, they farm. You can also use it in education because if you put mobile technologies that sit in a mobile house or even in their buildings in terms of connectedness, and kids in the villages could learn new skills, and even adults could learn other skills they can use in business. We can create access to markets. through e-commerce, because these people, they do build products that could be sold further than their borders.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I could celebrate is the journey towards financial inclusion. Africa has unique challenges, but Africa also knows how to build unique solutions. And definitely there is movement in the fintechs towards financial inclusion. It's pretty to watch because it's really for Africa.
So what unique challenges have you faced as an African female in the tech industry, and how have you overcome them?
I think there were no role models in my time. And again, I would lean on the fact that having a father who's present, it's such a blessing. When I was growing up, I thought it's default setting. Now I have learned that it's a privilege. And it shaped how I perceive men. So if I meet a man who is sexist and has challenges, I'm able to work through the issues and appreciate that it doesn't define all men. So in a way, I could ask men to be my coaches and mentors. And also some of those bosses I had at Telkom when I kicked off my career. It shaped the fact that there are people who really want you to win and they're mean.
Yeah.
Because I remember there's one executive, Blair Abshire, when I got promoted to the role of senior manager availability, he said, the first 3 months, I'll wake up with you through those customer calls. Because they were hectic, those calls. The customers would throw in their weight in the middle of the night, not aware that you've had 10 of these calls through the night. But he didn't even have to stay with me for like longer. I don't think we even finished a month. And he was comfortable that I'm okay.
Yeah.
But what for me, it set a tone. It shaped who I am as a leader as well, because then it says, give others an opportunity to be more of where they are, more than who they think they can be sometimes. Mm. And the other challenge that I faced as a female was definitely that I walk into a room, in some cases, they look at you like you are brainless. You are a BE candidate. And unfortunately, on that one, I had to confront it head on. I had already dealt with racism in my very first job. And now it was time to just carry on and approach people with respect.
Yeah.
But I will address you and say, no, I'm here on merit. Yeah. I promise you. There were times when I had to repeat that I do have a master's in IT and I do have an MBA. So like literally you repeat.
It's like I wasn't given this position.
Yes, and I've got experience of working with the following. Mm. Because I realized, because this gentleman had even the audacity to tell me, you're even younger than my daughter. And I realized age has nothing to do with it. So I had to emphasize what I'm bringing to the table. Without arrogance, with all humility of heart. And I remember saying to him, and I know you can teach me what you really do around here. So in all fairness, I was not saying, I know everything you're doing. I'm saying I am bringing my skill of understanding the customer and driving the customer priorities. Help me respond to this customer with you.
Yeah.
And soon enough, this gentleman was probably my praise singer.
Yeah.
So it's that thing where I said, I'm able to transcend where you have a differing voice from mine. When we recover, I'm able to still continue with you. That David behavior where he's able to look at his mighty men and all their frailty and say, yeah, they wanted to stone me, but we can still go to war together.
The wisdom from it all. Name one key trend shaping the future of technology that is not artificial intelligence, and how would you advise South Africa to adapt?
You seem to be AI exhausted.
Yes.
I would consider robotic process automation. It's probably the most underrated bullet that could help us grow this economy very quickly, because it's got a way of unlocking cost optimization. It's got a way of unlocking efficiencies, and it can be used on top of our magic earpiece. Most of us love this old earpiece, but you could, you know, and enhance the work behind it, because it does help, especially with cash collection as well, because you could really, really automate some repetitive processes. And if you lean up those processes, you get more value out of automating them.
Yeah.
Because the challenge would be if you just automate without trying to, you know, improve the process itself as well.
Just for people who don't know, ERP is?
RPA is robotic process automation. So this is where you take ordinary repetitive processes and you automate them.
So ERP?
ERP is Enterprise Resource Management. Resource planning system.
Yeah.
Yes. Even I don't remember the full name anymore. That's how much IT acronym, people could use the acronym. Yes.
Yeah, so at board level, we are exposed to them, but I know it's not everybody is.
So I do believe that if we harness RPAs, one thing that we need to do to adapt is definitely that we need to train people. We need to also ensure that we manage the ethical issues around it. Because once you bring in RPAs, people feel like they are being displaced.
Mm.
In most of the places where we've applied RPAs, I've seen us not displacing people, but giving them the opportunity to apply themselves to their work instead of
and
doing
they do it.
Yeah,
and
instead
they do?
Of doing repetitive tasks.
Yes.
And also when you build this RPAs with them, they finally do appreciate the fact that they don't have to work long hours. But in some cases, you do need to balance the act between I was getting overtime and you just took away my overtime.
Yeah.
Because the robot doesn't sleep.
Yeah, the financial incentive.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot to think about that. I would rather get into that discussion. I am heartful of AI. I know it's a reality, but still. What are the ethical considerations you encourage boards and exco to think about when providing service of enhancing their leadership capabilities?
I do believe boards need to ensure that they have a code of ethics. That's still just as important. It's basics.
Yeah.
But also the conduct of boards need to align with the code. It's not necessarily just that the code is communicated. It's the fact that the conduct is aligned. And also it's key that there is diversity at board. Diversity and inclusion will always ensure that you balance decisions that are being made by the board.
Mm. I don't know. Just wondering. Diversity and inclusion. Do you really think we understand that? I'm not quite getting that sense in terms of... I think in South Africa, we get stuck on race and gender. But in terms of just different ways of interpreting, different perceptions, I don't think we've really come to that maturity level yet.
Not yet. But we're almost there. There are boards that genuinely have diversified themselves. So I see it from a technology point of view as an example.
Yeah.
You find that a board that already has a technology savvy board member, they tend to bring more members who are technology savvy because they need other areas that they know they lack.
Mm-hmm.
So it probably it's an interpretation of above where we were, maybe based on our history. So we probably need to appreciate that history made us believe that diversity and inclusion is just to make sure we've got more women and more dark skin around the table. But it's really expertise and a different way of thinking and different approaches that are coming to the table.
Different sectors, different industry, different... Yeah, I'm finding that's a missing link. Which is why qualifications is also a thing that, I don't know, it's CAs and,
Interesting enough, most of the boards that have CAs, you find they have CAs all the way.
Yeah.
So they lean in onto whatever is there.
Yeah, because people focus on audit. And audit is the history. It's not the future. It doesn't mean because you understand the financials that you are strategically strong. You get what I'm saying?
But maybe the one word you do not like to engage with, AI, may just help change the landscape, because now boards will have to grapple with technology more than ever before.
Yeah.
And it's coming with its own challenges. Either you understand what's happening behind the curtain and the impact it will have.
Mm. Mm. And it doesn't matter if you're a CA or not.
Exactly.
How do you see IT strategies contributing to ESG objectives of organizations?
I do believe that IT strategies need to have sustainability measurements.
Yeah.
That's key.
Mm.
And as well, you need to look at your data centers and measure things like energy consumption.
Mm.
And if you have outsourced, or maybe let's say you use cloud, you need to do strong supplier governance and really hold your suppliers to account.
Their party risks and all that.
It's key.
Yeah.
So in a way, it definitely has to be on the IT strategy now.
Mm. I'm still stuck on the third party risk, because every time we meet, even for retirement funds, and you go to whether your different service providers, and a lot of them are also outsourcing, but they don't always think about the suppliers that they're using.
So suppliers are probably one of the risks that boards need to consider, and maybe sometimes satisfy themselves that their IT, especially in IT, their IT has developed a system.
Yes.
That manages supplier risk.
Mm.
Because it's not only from an ESG point of view. Even cybersecurity is an issue.
Yeah.
The best way to attack you will be through your suppliers, not necessarily because your defenses may be strong internally, but
yeah, that's one way.
The weakest link may be your suppliers.
Yes.
So it's key that there is some way or the other. And even if you, let's say your suppliers go out of business or they fail, what happens then?
Yeah.
So these are things that need to be some way in a model. I do recall in Malaysia, we developed a model that allowed us to assess our third-party risk. And we could review those third-party risks based on this model.
Yeah.
And the model had to change oftentimes because the risk landscape is changing.
Yeah. So what do you do for fun?
I bake.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you remember the advert?
Mm-mm.
What do you do for fun? We cook. We bake.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. I bake. I genuinely cook.
I don't remember you ever baking anything for me.
Not really, but you don't like gluten and flour. So please, can I?
You have to find ways, the gluten-free, dairy-free stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So in a way, I genuinely enjoy cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I cook for people whom I know are busy with something, and I just make sure they have a meal.
That's nice.
It speaks to me.
Yeah.
It's who I am.
I await delivery.
Then my gift comes out.
Yes.
I also do garden.
Yeah.
But not flowers and grass, please.
Which gardening then?
I plant vegetables, things we can eat. Thank you. Remember my background?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I even have a guava tree. I've got a grape tree. I've got a lychee. It's got lychees right now. I've got vegetables in my backyard. Literally, I do gardening. So that's how I unwind.
So your organic farming is in
yes,
the back.
And I carry manure from the village and bring it to the city so that my plants could have fertility that I'm familiar with.
So anyway, if you had three people over for dinner, whether they're alive or dead, who would they be?
I only have one, maybe with his wife. His Excellency President Paul Kagame.
Oh, with his wife?
Yes.
Yeah?
Because probably from the wife, I could learn things that he may not necessarily articulate. Because sometimes when you're living, you're just being yourself. So you're not seeing some of the things around you and how you're showing up. And the reason why I would want to chat with Mr. Kagame is because around 2010, I met someone who was a consultant in that country,
mm-hmm.
who was there to work with him and his people on how to make that country competitive. And how he observed it, he said, the president will come, fold his shirt, sit in a workshop, and discuss and participate on how to make Rwanda competitive.
Oh, wow.
And that really stayed with me. And it stayed in my heart for all these years. And when I saw the changes in Rwanda now and the movement in Rwanda, I mean, they have really shifted the dial in economic growth and everything else. And even in their healing as a nation, it made me realize that it's a deliberate effort. Africa can. And I would like to hear from him if there are things that we can template.
Yeah.
And bring them to all the African countries. I would like to hear him tell me if his military background also helps, because there is systems and structures, and I'm all for systems and structures. And from his wife, I genuinely want to hear from her. How does she see this vision? Because she had to buy into it. She had to support him. And I mean, they started from a very painful past.
Yeah.
So for me, it's probably my heart for Africa. I do believe Africa is great. It's blessed. And there is a future for Africa. And I need those answers. And I've seen one man who has shifted the dial and is moving somewhere with his dream for his country.
And it is said that not all the other presidents, prime ministers are being inspired by that vision, where you can literally see the movement of Rwanda from one level to the next, to say, can't we have that in our own country?
I think they see it, but it's that thing of learning, because you need to have a learning attitude. So a growth mindset requires a learning attitude. And sometimes you need to get out of your area and go learn, genuinely learn. And for me, this secret that this consultant gave, it's not anyway. You can Google about the president of Rwanda. You won't hear this. So it's almost like there are secrets that you need to be intimate with. And hence, sometimes just get closer. Find out, how did they do it in reality? Because in all fairness, it's the fact that he was willing to fold his shirt every day. He showed up on time for the workshops. Why? Because he had a dream.
Yeah. That's the thing I say, the vision, to have the vision. Because there is no way we can praise Dubai from being a desert and to looking the way it does, and we go shopping there, and we don't envision the same for ourselves on the African continent.
I would agree, and yet I would say to you, we would normally attach our other issues that we have here in Africa, and we again play the unique card. Hence my love for Rwanda, because Rwanda is Africa, and they have had challenges, real challenges. They are recovering from a lot.
Yeah.
But did they grow out of it? Yes. And even the people themselves, you can see, you can perceive there is hope. And we do need that. Africa needs to rise in hope again. Yeah. And we are endowed with a lot. Unfortunately, it's not moving us to where we need to go.
Yeah. We need to appreciate it more. I was just in Guatemala, where, again, not many Africans are traveling to Central America. I don't know. And they perceive us to be doing other things when we go there. But but there is a whole generation that is just like sick and tired of the stereotypes. They're like, we want to build a different country. So I think there is that movement. Hopefully it's going to work. So we're just about at the end. What legacy do you hope to leave behind?
I really hope I'm able to leave a legacy where people say, she touched my life. And I think I'm more fortunate because I've even had some of my former board members say to me, if you didn't come our way, we wouldn't have gotten through COVID. That for me is a testament of my legacy in the workplace. And I've had people that said to me, boss, they still call me boss. It's a term of endearment now. Boss, if you need anything, I'm available and I can help you. Whatever you need in whatever you're doing, I'm available. And that for me, it's a testament of I showed up, inspired someone, I held a mirror to them for them to see the greatness that they are. Because in all fairness, I don't think it was even about the technology, but it's about how do I transform organizations? How do I transform government? How do I transform the people around me and change lives every day? And it's interesting that I still work with some of the rural schools. We inspire teachers, we support the children, where there's a need, we close the gap. And I've had organizations now that have jumped in to support us. My parents still go with me, as elderly as they are. And they don't have a grandchild there, but they are there with me because this is what they taught me. This is who they said we are. We add value in the communities that we live in. And for me, it's that reality. It's not things that you can see in a magazine or see on TV. It's genuinely things that sit in somebody's heart who will say, I am who I am because that woman walked my way.
Yeah. And also, I will always enjoy the fact that when you are CIO, when I was a board member, and I used to put up my hand, you took it seriously. I used to attend conferences with you, and which is a trick that most board members really shouldn't lose, that to connect sometimes with executives and learn more so that they are also able to sell issues more. And because other board members don't always listen to executives, but when other board members say, hey, actually, that makes sense, it's easy to sell the case.
But can I tell you a secret? Now, when I was busy with my studies, I learned a secret that elites sometimes, they're good at managing the media and managing how they communicate. So I do believe that the role also lies with the CIOs to walk the journey with board members. Hence, I even created that course, IT for Non-IT Leaders. Because you were confident enough to ask questions. Let's start there. And appreciate that you bring a different expertise. The fact that you don't have expertise in technology does not make you less. That's big.
Yeah.
And on its own, it helps because then I'm able to appreciate that, okay, this is where you are. So if I have to even have a one-on-one with you and walk you through some of the concepts, it goes a long way.
Yeah.
And in a way, I do believe that it takes both. And I'm hoping that most of the boards in the ex-course will take advantage of this course that we've developed for them.
Yeah. And before we go, you give us your final wisdom. Your doctorate, you are doing it with Gibbs. How has that gone?
We are almost on the examination phase.
Yay.
But I'm already enjoying the product that has come out of it. And even this IT for Non-IT Leaders is one of the spin-offs of this journey. Because there are things I learned along the way. And a shout out to the board members that really gave me time. My two advisors, Mr. Teddy Daka and Mr. Stuart van Graan.
Yeah.
They gave me practical views about how it happens.
And I know both of them.
You see now.
You see, I'm always surrounded with amazing angels.
They supported a scholar.
Yes.
To make sure that they help me shape the reality. And also to the companies that also gave me their airtime. They are not to be disclosed. I have given them my word, but I really want to say thank you.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. I grew. And an acknowledgement to my professors at Gibbs.
Yeah.
They really walked with me. I am an executive. This is one place where I had to unlearn a lot.
Yeah.
And appreciate that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it really opened my eyes to a new world.
Yeah.
And it probably also propelled this journey that I'm in because I realized I could change the world with what I know for sure.
Yeah.
Because these are lived experiences.
Yes, I know you're encouraging me to do mine.
Yes.
But, you know, my mother is my priority for now, but I will go on that journey. In closing, what wisdom would you leave us with?
There are two things that I would like us to always keep in mind. you will never walk through a certain road again in some cases. Just do it right. And whatever you think you are, you become.
Good one, my friend. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Another beautiful end to our wise conversation. Hope you enjoyed this wisdom as I have. Until the next episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumswamy. Be compassionate, love-filled, live consciously. Thank you for listening to this episode of Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumswamy. Please also like, follow and subscribe to our channel and share the wisdom with your friends. I would love it if you could rate and review as well. Wisdom Personified, Conversations with Dudumswamy is also available on YouTube, Facebook Watch, Apple and Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. Enjoy the wisdom journey.